recording has started.
Thanks. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. My name is Jordan Carter, the .NZ participant, member of the CCWG, rapporteur for Work Party 1, and this is our meeting number 21 on the 27th of July, 2015. We've just got a small agenda today, 12 substantive items to work through. The only thing I wanted to say at the start is that because we've got that number and we've got 2 hours to get through it, I'd really appreciate it if people could, if possible, keep their interventions short, concise, and only raise things that really need to be raised. There are quite a few things that do need to be raised, so if there's something that you think is a marginal improvement or a text suggestion or something, please don't do that on this call. Please fire an email through to the list just so we can have a prospect of getting through all of the items on our agenda. I've tried to structure these with a couple of quick items first and then the three or four that I think are going to take more discussion. And then at the end, a few documents that have just come back from the lawyers in the last couple of hours to look at their comments. I think through probably what is an administrative error on my part, the lawyers aren't actually on the call today. But I don't think we'll need them to explain their comments. I think their comments are quite well done. So for the first six or seven items, we will discuss those and try and come to an agreement on how to proceed. And for the items that are about the lawyer's comments that start in our agenda at number eight, we'll just be looking at the comments that legal have come back with. The first item is an agenda review. Does anyone see anything on this list that is missing that we need to deal with today? Recalling that we've got one more call in the few hours that lead up to the freeze for the dock. If you do think of something that's missing and you remember it during the call, we can deal with it in the last any other business item. Greg, your hand is up.
Just briefly, I'm not sure if we want to deal with this in one of the enumerated sections or elsewhere, but the relationship between the community assembly and the community mechanism, if anything, is something I think we need to explore. Looking at them each discreetly, I think we've not spent too much time on the overlap. Thanks.
I think that we should deal with that in number five, about the community assembly, and I don't think there is an overlap, so we can tease that out there. So let's make sure that we do that, Greg. Thanks. Do you have another point, or is that your expired hand? Thanks. Okay, let's move on to item number two then on the agenda, AOC reviews and the bylaws. You'll recall that there was a discussion about document transparency, and Steve and some others did some drafting for the header part of the bylaws that would deal with that issue. And that seems to be okay on email. So what I'm hoping we can get is a quick yay or nay here. And I'd just like to turn the call over to Steve to discuss that. Steve, the doc's in the window. The floor is yours.
Thanks, Jordan. As you predicted, this should be quick. On last week's call, we identified the fact that we didn't have any explanation for how to handle the non-disclosure problem. So you have scroll control, and each of you ought to be able to go down to the section on page three, and it's the yellow text on page three. You'll want to make it a little bit larger if you haven't read this already in the emails that we circulated. This was trying to confront a problem that we had recognized, which is that how do we handle it if ICANN says we're going to redact or withhold an information that's sought by a review team? Second, when ICANN does turn over that information or information that it considers to be confidential or proprietary or sensitive, how will determining the rules under which the review team must not disclose that in its report, in its recommendations, or otherwise? So Alan Greenberg, Greg Shatton, James Gannon, Jordan helped me, and we drafted some text, and what you see in front of you is the yellow text that we drafted, and then our legal team over the weekend was able to make, they added only one sentence to this. So I was gratified to see that. The sentence they added is not showing here because the presenter was unable to bring it in time, I'll be able to read that to you when we get down to that part of it. So, Jordan, do you wish a paragraph-by-paragraph walkthrough, or have me quickly tell you the line that the lawyers added?
If there's a line that the lawyers added, why don't you just quickly, is it an add to that confidential disclosure thing?
Oh, exactly. Yeah, that's the only thing we're talking about here.
Okay. Great. So we've seen the yellow text, and Kimberly's loading the doc, I think, that's got the lawyer's edition.
Oh, okay. Well, then, it's only one sentence, where they say that the confidential disclosure framework here shall also describe the provisions of any non-disclosure agreement that members of a review team may be asked to sign. And this is about disclosing to people that before I join, say, let's say I want to join the new GTLD program review team, and we're going to be having access to confidential documents about some of the pricing. Well, I should know ahead of time, before I join the review team, I should know whether I have had to sign something, and that would give me an opportunity to say maybe I'd rather not look at the documents. I'll join the review team and not look at the documents, which makes me a little less useful to the review team. Or I might say I'm comfortable signing this non-disclosure, so put me on the review team. And I think that's a sensible addition from the attorneys, and I appreciate that. So it looks like we have a new document loaded, and you can still proceed to page 3, and I think you'll see their addition.
It's not highlighters. Yeah, but it's the second-to-last paragraph on page 3.
Exactly.
Second-to-last paragraph.
Yep. In the lawyer's document, you'll see that line with purple underline, so it's the same text. So, Jordan, that's the walkthrough. I'm so grateful to those four of you that helped me with that, and I think we've got something we can run with. Are there any questions?
Thanks, Steve. Are there any questions to me? This is, a bit long. It does the job fine, and I think it's good to go. And with that, I think my personal view is that this document can be closed and sent off to this drafting experiment that we've talked about. But others may not share exactly that view. So are there any comments on the text? Any questions to ask Steve?
There don't have to be,
by the way. It is allowed for it to be okay.
Yeah, this is great. Thanks, everyone, for your help. Back to you, Jordan.
Thanks, Steve, and thanks, everyone. That is a good piece of work. So I think what happens now with this is that this is kind of a final read, if you like, from us, and the CCWG may need to kind of rubber stamp it or not, but otherwise it's pretty much ready for the drafting exercise that we've talked about before. So thank you, Steve, all. Let us move on to our next agenda item, which is the introductory text to the community power that I circulated over the weekend. This is item 3 on our agenda. My memory is just failing me, and my document manager is failing me. Can someone remind me whether the lawyers have had a cut at this yet? Does anyone know the answer to this question? Because I've managed to lose the folders that have got the lawyer's replies. Okay, so there are no helpful answers to that. So we'll just look through this text. From what I could tell, this text was pretty uncontroversial. Certainly the introductory part should be, because it just lists the powers and notes that the fundamental bylaws are going to be dealt with in another part. And then it seemed to me that we could save a little bit of space in our powers papers and get a real heads-up understanding among people about the use of the powers by putting the petition discussion and decision steps as an explanation right at the front. So that's why I added that second section. And the important thing to consider there, we've talked about these timeframes a number of times, about the 15-day windows. So I think if there are any issues that remain with those timeframes, we should know that now, remembering that the petition is going to start when an ICANN decision is announced that might be subject. So it's not when the court makes a decision that we don't know about, but it's... Johnny, that looks like you. Could you please mute your line? Yeah, everyone should be on mute unless they're actually speaking. Thanks. So that, aside from the 15-day stuff, I think this is all uncontroversial, and I think that is as well. So are there any comments on this one? If there aren't comments from lawyers on here, there might be in the second set of documents they've only just sent back in the last 20 minutes or so. In this text, we'll just start the front of Section 5B of the report, and then following it will be the four detailed sections on the community powers. Avery, hi, welcome to the call. Sorry that you're late. We're on item number 5 in the agenda. Oh, no, we're on item number 3 in the agenda, just the intro text, the community powers section. Caboose, your hand is up.
It's a real point. I have seen and read several documents, and we have some more different words for bylaw. A standard bylaw, in my view, is okay, but we are using also regular bylaw or bylaw, and could be some note to some people to make it throughout the document a single term, not different. Call them either standard bylaw that you did is very good, but not regular bylaw, not traditional bylaw. There are so many times so the people may be mixed up or confused, if possible.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. That's a good drafting point, Caboose. I'll make sure that the staff take it on board as they do the proofreading of the final proposal document so that reference is standard throughout. Thanks. Okay. If there are no other comments on this draft explanatory text, I was hoping it would be uncontroversial. So let us move on to the next item, if that's okay, which is item 4 on the fundamental bylaws. There was an explanation missing in this, and so the document that's been presented to us here is the one that's come back from the lawyers, but this is not the document that we need. I'm sorry, staff. We need the one that was circulated with my original email for this meeting, because it's got some material that Steve prepped for us. That explains, if you can give us scroll control, that explains after the list of proposed fundamental bylaws, it set out the discussion about the head office location. So, Steve, I'd like you just to briefly, if you could, take the floor again and note this insert. So, with the document that's in front of you on the screen, people, if you scroll down to page 3 of this document, just after the list at the top, there's up to item number 6, and then there's a begin insert line. So that's the text that we're talking about now. So, Steve, could you just give us a quick intro to this?
Sure, Jordan. This is Steve DelBianco. Now, the lawyer's version did not include this particular section that I inserted, so they haven't commented on this. And therefore, it's preliminary, okay, everyone? I made one of the points on last week's calls on Work Party 1 that the rationale in here, right in this section, was pretty lame. It basically said, we don't really anticipate ICANN moving its headquarters, so I don't think we need to make this fundamental. And I don't think that captures at all the reasoning. The reason I say that is that under the AOC into bylaws, we had already documented how the Articles of Incorporation and the existing bylaws satisfied 8B of the affirmation commitments, and we used that rationale to explain why 8B didn't need to be brought into the bylaws. It was already there. Then you separately go to the analysis of whether Article 18 in the bylaws needed to become fundamental or not. So this explanation that you see in front of you at the bottom of page 3, copied from the analysis that we did, well, 3 months ago, at the first draft when we showed why 8B didn't need to be brought in. So if you scroll down to the bottom of page 3, I indicate that the key to remember is that if it's a regular bylaw, it takes a three-quarter vote to block the change, but the fundamental bylaw takes a three-quarter vote to approve the change. But any change in ICANN's location also requires a change to the Articles of Incorporation, not the bylaws, but the Articles of Incorporation, which we scarcely ever have talked about in the CCWG. But in the actual Articles of Incorporation, it's a statement that ICANN is a nonprofit public benefit corporation and is not organized for the private gain of any person. It is organized under the California Nonprofit Public Benefit Corporation Law for charitable and public purposes. So a significant change in that would require two-thirds membership approval and two-thirds of the board approval. And that's Article 9 of the current Articles of Incorporation. In other words, those thresholds are buried in the current articles. And I'm unaware of any discussion we've had in the CCWG of changing any words in the Articles of Incorporation. So I indicate in here three reasons for the CCWG to conclude that Article 18 doesn't also need to be fundamental. The first reason is that the public comment was evenly split. We had four people wanting it to be Article 18 to be fundamental and four who did not. I note the governments, three governments, were among those expressing strong opposition. The second reason is that the two-thirds vote to change anything in the articles, which is existing under ICANN, there's no change that we're making. And the third is that the sole member could block any proposed change. Now, the reason I have put this to the lawyers is that on that Articles of Incorporation, where two-thirds of the membership must approve a change, I wonder whether that is two-thirds of the votes of the community mechanism of sole member. And I just want them to verify that, because in the Articles of Incorporation, it says that it takes a two-thirds vote of the board and a two-thirds vote of members if ICANN has members. So it's one of those instances in ICANN's foundational documents where ICANN anticipated that it might be a member organization, and so I think that applies to us there. So happy to take a cue on this. It's a longer explanation than the two sentences that were in there last week, but it's much more similar to what we had in our May 3rd draft under Section 8B of the Affirmation of Commitments. Back to you, Jordan.
Thanks, Steve, for that. And let's have any kind of questions or comments here. Caboose, I see that your hand is up. Are you wanting to...
Yes, my hand is up. You excuse me for the previous section, but note it down and maybe you come back. You always refer to ICANN bylaw, whether the issue that we have discussed, ICANN bylaw is the general ICANN bylaw plus the IANA budget. Sorry, ICANN budget is the general ICANN budget plus the IANA budget. Whether you have referred to that or not, that is something that should be clear. Just the previous meeting, just take a note and come back and, if possible, correct that. But now coming to that, I sent you a message regarding the quorum. When we say two-thirds of the committee voting, which one, those who third participate? So what is the issue of the quorum should exist when we make a decision? If there is no quorum, the decision is not valid. Did you mention somewhere that for any of these actions you need this minimum majority, simple majority, 50% plus one of those who has the right to vote, they participate in the vote in order that threshold of those participants reach or does not reach the level? This is something which was missed. I explained it, perhaps I was not clear. Maybe you have taken it, maybe you have not taken it. Thank you.
I think Caboose, it's an important point, and I want to come back to that in any other business at the end. There is one outstanding piece of work that does need to be done, which is the describing of the quorum and how votes are counted. And I know that some of the staff have been doing some work, and I'm hoping to ask Alan to work with them to flesh that out. Okay. So let's put it on the agenda at item number 14.
Good. But ICANN budget, please refer that it includes two budgets, the overall budget, including the IANA budget, not to have any mistake.
And we'll do that in the summary paper. I've got a note down for that.
Thank you.
Jordan, it's Steve. I pasted into the chat Article 9, which is the last article of ICANN's very, very brief Articles of Incorporation. So please don't put anything in the chat right now, team, just so I walk through this. And this is in response to Caboose about quorum. It's funny that the Articles of Incorporation say that when the corporation has members, any such amendment must be ratified by 2/3 majority of the members voting on a proposed amendment. So it looked like the articles didn't have anything like quorum in it at all. In other words, there's no requirement for a quorum, and it simply says 2/3 of the members who vote. And as I'm asking our lawyers to clarify, that what happens when you have one member, right? What is 2/3 of one member? I suppose it's the 2/3 of the weighted voting who vote in the mechanism. Okay?
I don't think so, Steve. I think that because there's only one member, they'll either vote for the change or against, and the decision making within that member is a matter for that member to decide. So I think that there's that's pretty straightforward. But we'll just see what the lawyers say rather than discussing what we think the lawyers will say. Thanks, Caboose, for those points. Are there any other points on this text? To me, it's a clear explanation of the point, and while it takes up a bit of space, it's worth being very clear about this. So,
Jordan, it's Steve. If we were to publish this report as is, I would strongly recommend inserting right at the end of the section that we would note that four commenters had wanted it to be in our fundamental bylaw, or make some note of the fact that there's dissent on this. It's not necessarily rising to the level of an objection to the CCWG proposal. It may not even be an objection to the section that we could note, and I could even tell you who the public commenters were who thought this should be fundamental. I leave that to the group to decide, and maybe we can cover it on tomorrow's call.
I think that you've noted that in the first of those inset paragraphs right at the end of page 3. It notes that the public comments were split, so I don't know if we need to draw attention to that again. But if you've got a different view, let's see some text on the list between now and tomorrow's call and just discuss that there if we could. Thank you for that work, Steve. Staff, can we just turn briefly back to the lawyered version of this paper, because it includes a couple of questions for us to just think about. And let's not get into the red track changes, because that's not what we need to worry about now. And if you just look at the pink comment bubbles on this, the first one is just an editing change and doesn't need... The question is whether we need to discuss any of these comment bubbles. And the one that seems material to me on a quick scan is the comment number 2, where there's a note that the community mechanism, the sole member, will have the authority to amend bylaws without the board's approval. And I think we need to follow the lawyer's suggestion there, which would be about imposing a very high threshold for unanimous initiation of any bylaws changes. And that's because we haven't really discussed in CCWG giving the membership body the power to propose bylaws changes at this point. We've left that largely in the hands of the board, and so we shouldn't accidentally or without discussion create a power to do so in a way that is kind of unexpected. The other comment that I would just draw your attention to is comment 4, not because of what it says in terms of the IRP rules being high level, but because there's a missing thing that we need to make fundamental, which is the community mechanism as sole member. It's a small but not insignificant oversight. So we do need to add that mechanism to this paper, to this list of fundamental bylaws. And I think, in my view, we don't need to deal with any of the other comments on there. So are there any other comments to make here? Caboose, I see that your hand is up.
Yes, my hand is up. Maybe you covered the question, but I thought I was still thinking that the community could initiate modification of fundamental bylaw. Is it there somewhere? So it is not that I can here. Modify and community command is the other side. Community initiate modification of bylaw, and that is right. It is the issue that what you just discussed, or it is different.
Hmm.
Still, I'm a little sleepy, 4 o'clock in the morning. I just to be in a few minutes totally awake. Have you addressed that?
Well, what I've said is that the lawyers have pointed out that the law gives the right to the member to initiate bylaws changes.
Yes.
But we have not, in our proposal, we've talked about the board proposing bylaws changes or the community suggesting them and then the board doing an assessment of that process. We've never discussed directly the community being able to propose bylaws changes itself. And because we can't take away that right in the law, the way that the lawyers have suggested dealing with that is to impose a very high threshold for the community mechanism, a single member, to do it, so that effectively it never would. And my suggestion is that if we want to change that, because that's in line with the status quo, if we want to introduce the ability for the community to initiate bylaws changes without discussion with the board, that's something that we should consider as part of work stream two. It's not something that we should try and initiate in this part of the process. That's where my head is.
As long as that possibility exists, whether you do it version one, work stream one, work stream two, doesn't matter. I know there is no time to do that, but I think it is very important. How many people have discussed that, all of them, disbelieve that the community should also have the possibility to initiate modification to the bylaw. Whether you do it as Doric Stream 2, okay, just make a flag and do it at that time.
Great. Thank you, Thomas. Matthew, your hand is up.
Thank you, Jordan. I concur with you that we should defer this as much as possible. However, I think by just changing the bylaws into a sole member structure and without, as part of Workstream 1, my understanding is that unless we specify limits, the sole member will have the ability to initiate bylaw changes, because that's part of the legal way of members organizations. And I have two things. First is, I understand the board would still have to vote even if it's initiated by the community, so it's not setting the board aside. And secondly, I think our safest approach would be to aim at the highest level of consensus, like full consensus of the ASOAC mechanism, in order to, while we further refine how it would work. But I think we have to do something and say something in Workstream 1. Otherwise, just by legal consideration, the system inherits the ability for members to, for the sole member to initiate or change. I'm not sure I'm making myself clear. I'm not a lawyer here. But
I think you are making yourself clear, Matthew. Two points. First of all, the lawyers say quite clearly that there would be statutory authority to amend the bylaws under the California law without board approval. So that's in comment 2 on the paper that's in front of us now. There's a more important point, and I can't remember who raised this. It might have been Caboose. It might have been someone else, which is that under the legislation, the member, as a legal member, has a range of statutory rights. The right to amend the bylaws is just one of them. And somewhere in our public comment report, we have to have a section that says, at a high level, how the member, the community member of sole, the community mechanism of sole member, how it can exercise all of those powers. And so my suggestion is that rather than dealing with it in each of these as it comes up, we have a general section in a general mention in the part of the report that introduces the community mechanism as sole member, that says that all of the other statutory rights and powers can only be exercised by consensus of the voting members in the community mechanism, or something similar to that. And if we want to unpick that and provide different thresholds or different understandings for each of the statutory powers, we should make that a Workstream 2 item as well, because we do not have time to disentangle it between now and about 36 hours from now. So thanks for saying that sounds sensible in the chat. Steve, your hand is up.
Thank you, Jordan. I was going to ask you if there are other surprise pink bubbles about other statutory powers that accrue to the member. And you say that there are several others, and we probably have heard them from the lawyers before. So I'll look forward to that discussion, and I agree that that list should be articulated wherever we describe in the bylaws, describe in our report, the community mechanism as sole member. But turning to this section, if this pink bubble number 2 is the only aspect of bylaws changes that has a statutory implication, I put this in the chat as well. I don't necessarily think it's a bad idea to let a 3/4 of the sole member propose a bylaws change that doesn't require board approval. Without getting into that debate, your view, I think, is that there's too little time to sort that out before we publish later this week. Is that right?
That is 100,000,000% my view.
All right. So I would suggest that right where this pink bubble is, let's put this in the bylaws section under fundamental bylaws. Note that it's a statutory power and that we are soliciting public comments on whether to where to set the threshold, whether it be 3/4 or higher. And that way we alert our audience about the potential and give them an opportunity to comment on it, because then we'll have 8 weeks to work all this out. And that way we'll get the benefit of public comment on it, as opposed to hiding the ball until we figure it out. Thank you.
Okay. There's a suggestion which I just need to digest. And I suggest, actually, Steve, that we put that as a return item to discuss at our next call of WP1, just to finally confirm whether we include that reference or not. Because it seems like, on the one hand, either we're going to defer the consideration of that or we're not. But getting public feedback on it is just something I would like us to think a little bit more about. So can we agree that that's on the agenda for the call on the 28th to finally confirm?
Fine by me.
And otherwise, can we move on to our next agenda item? Because I noticed, unfortunately, that we're already lagging slightly on the schedule we need to do to make this call work. So thank you, everyone, for that. I'd like us to move on to the next agenda item, which is the text on the ICANN Community Assembly. And that text is now in front of us with a set of 3 different comments on it from Keith Jarzak, Alan Greenberg, and myself responding to others. And this is a text that came out after our last call, so there's been a bit of an email discussion about it, and there has not been a discussion about it on the call. And you can see, you will have read some of the comments. If I could just summarize the discussion as I've seen it so far, there's a bit of discussion about the title. There's been a couple of suggestions that we should have it as ICANN Community Forum for 2 reasons, because the ICA is already an acronym in use, and because ICA is the first 3 letters of ICANN, and so it might be confusing to use the same there. There's been a bit of confusion or interlinkage between the idea of this assembly or forum and the public accountability forum. So I'd just like to clear that up. The drafting needs to be improved on that. The public accountability forum proposed by the advisors was a discussion between boards, SOs, and ACs, the community, and so on, in an open round table to be held once a year to help all parts of the ICANN system hold each other accountable. So the only proposal—it's not a body; it's an event. It's a meeting. And my only reason for including it here was to just say that it would be a meeting of this, a similar assembly of people. So rather than quote creating two things unquote, we could integrate it here. The language didn't quite do that well, but there have already been suggestions about how to improve that. The other point is a question that Greg raised at the start of this call about the interaction between this and the community mechanism as sole member. I'd like just to explain what my thinking is on that. The community mechanism as sole member voting happens by each SO and AC or its sub-faction deciding what its vote is and notifying its vote to whatever the returning officer for this process is going to be. There is no group. There is no gathering. There is no discussion. So the only group that's involved in the model is this group. The only assembly is this assembly. The only gathering of people to discuss the use of these powers before they're exercised by the SOs and ACs is this grouping. And so far, unless my memory fails me utterly, this is the only new grouping, quote-unquote, that we've proposed creating, which is following our kind of doctrine of conservatism and stuff. So the roles that are set out would be where the discussion of any of the community powers happens before they're exercised, and it could be the vehicle for the public accountability discussion or the roundtable. And I don't think that any of the rest of the points here are fundamental. There are improvements to the drafting and so on. So I'd like to ask for a speaking list on this text. Alan Greenberg first, and then Caboose. So, Alan, please go ahead.
Thank you very much. A number of points. First of all, on the name, which I think is the least important of the issues, I did like the name ICANN Community Assembly. The fact that it's the first three letters of ICANN and is an acronym already used in our community probably pushes us away from it. I really wanted to avoid words like forum, which is a term already well used in our vernacular to mean something very different. So, and this is the same with organization, supporting organization or committee. So I, you know, the name I think is least important, although we are going to have to find something. In addition to the text, Bernie has also proposed or made a comment that he doesn't think it's needed at all. I responded with a statement that evolved as I was writing it, to be quite honest, to say I think we need this desperately. It's interesting. We are creating a new part of the ICANN governance model. We're saying the community is part of ICANN governance, and yet we have no vehicle with which the vehicle, and that's used in a very general sense, with which the community can discuss things. And I think this is absolutely crucial. It highlights the fact that we, other than something convened by the CEO at the CEO's whim, we have no vehicle at all for groups working together or even talking to each other or even knowing what each other's look like. So I think there is a need for something like this. Maybe it's more than just the group that discusses invoking powers. Maybe it isn't. I'm not sure why this needs to be part of Workstream 1. Clearly, we need some vehicle to act as a prelude and a postlude of petitioning, but we may need something more. There's a lot of different ideas on the table. I see no reason that we have to determine this at this point. If, heaven help us, we have to invoke any of these privileges in the next 8 months, or the first 6-8 months after the bylaws are written, something will coalesce to allow us to discuss. But I think this is a really important idea we've gotten onto, and perhaps gotten onto it from the back door. And I think we should defer the discussion of this till we have time to do it properly. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Caboose, your hand is up.
Yes, I agree with Alan. If there is a need to have one single entity, prelude and postlude of the community petition, so far so good. Let's mention that and description and implications of the application would be broadcast into, provided that we do not have any other name or entity like forum and so on and so forth, because people will mistake that. I have sent this to some other colleagues inside my own organization, and they raised the question that Kavus, you use, not you use, there is a use of forum, there is a use of assembly, which one of which? No problem if you eliminate one and retain one and mention that clearly. What is the purpose of that? It is for some sort of discussion arrangement before and after any petition and so on and so forth. So that is all. But please kindly eliminate any other similar naming or similar entity to avoid the confusion. And at this last moment, we try to minimize the changes because we have no time.
Thanks, Kavus. Steve, your hand is up.
It'll be very quick, Jordan. I have always appreciated for the last 6 months you mentioning the idea that before the community would exercise the vote, that it would exercise a conversation and try to understand each other, figure out whether there really is support for an item, and in many cases find another way to solve the problem, and I appreciate that. I do think, though, that if there's confusion about another event and a structure, if there's confusion, I realize the authors of these two pages don't feel there's any confusion at all, but if evidence shows that this is confusing people, we can, from Workstream 1, we can rely upon the proven method of cross-community working groups, where we get on the phone, just as we're doing right now, and this would be the leaders of each ACNSO that's participating with Community Powers, get on the phone, discuss what we are considering to do in a particular vote, or whether to bring an IRP, or whether to launch a bylaws change, and then we would also have email discussions. So we have a crude but proven way of having a forum, but it's not a regular event yet, and we don't have a structure called the assembly that would institutionalize it. So it's possible that the forum event and the structure could go to Workstream 2, as long as we made sure we had the voting powers and an old fallback method of talking before we actually hit the send button on what our voting was. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Greg, your hand is up.
Hi, Greg Shatton for the record. I actually have some support and sympathy for Steve's suggestion just now. I think that it will allow us to try to work out any ways in which the CCWG model needs to be changed in order to turn it into community assembly, and I think there are some hurdles that are still very much problematic ones in designing this community assembly. As I've noted on the email list, I think that the population, though, that Steve cited for this group, which would be the leader of each ACNSO, is not the CCWG model. So I guess I just want to clarify which we're talking about. The leaders of the ACNSO would only be about 4, 5, 6 people, depending upon who's participating. So obviously the CCWG model has a seating chart, and it also has the concept of participants who participate on an equal footing until the fairly rare time comes for a vote or a formal consensus call, which, if this is not a decisionary body, that would never even happen. So, you know, this model would seem to work reasonably well. It's working now. Nobody is feeling excluded. Everyone gets to participate if they have the stomach for it. The more elaborate models we're working on aren't necessarily providing better opportunities for discourse. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. Sorry, I was on mute. Matthew, your hand is up.
Thank you, Jordan. It's Matthew Bay speaking. I think we need to ensure we don't get too tangled into the weeds of implementation here. Our focus on Workstream 1 is on the principles for this community discussion that has to take place. And I think the paper is actually that you are proposing, Jordan, is or maybe with Anne writing it, is quite a good description of the high-level principles for that discussion place or forum or assembly. And the details we're discussing right now about how to implement it should be left to implementation further down the road. And with the heavy agenda we have, I would encourage that we stick to this set of principles, and even the naming of the organization or public or forum or anything can be left out for further implementation after that. And that's, but we need to provide some detail on the key principles, and I agree with everything in the document for that. Thank you.
Thanks, Matthew. So that's a suggestion that we have a sort of description of the need for dialogue on a cross-community basis that happens before and after, before any powers are exercised, and that involves the mutual accountability or public accountability forum, and then we flesh out the details later. Alan and Kavusi, you've already spoken, so could I ask you to be very quick with any interventions you want to make now?
My intervention is very quick. I support what Matthew has just said. I think the document we have now can be reduced significantly and outline what it is we're trying to say without any of the specifics, and I'd be glad to work on that if you'd like me to. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Kavus?
Yes, very briefly. As long as we mention the need of such a group and then how to establish and how to do the actions and at what work stream we treat, that is okay. But there is a need to really mention that. Thank you.
Thanks, Kavus. Look, I think that, so I'm perfectly happy with that. And I was the person who drafted this paper, so this can just go into the history as some initial thinking on the detail. Is anyone violently opposed to the idea of replacing a sort of page and a half with a couple of paragraphs that just says that we need this forum and that the implementation details will be worked out as part of the implementation process? If anyone is violently opposed to that, please let us know in the email list or now ASAP. And let's move on to the next agenda item, because it is 15 minutes into the call and we're just starting item number 6. Which is the community power in the budget, the business plan, operating plans. Thank you for that discussion, everyone, by the way. And what's happened with this power, this paper? This paper I haven't seen the lawyer response yet, though I'm sure it has come back. What I tried to do with this version of this paper was to just tighten it up and to avoid repetition. And to consolidate on a couple of key design points, which is that there are two budgets, if you like, that are subject to the ICANN budget and the IANA one, because the CWG people were very concerned that a veto applying to the ICANN budget generally mustn't affect the IANA budget. So we have to take it out. Yes, Matthew makes an important point. The lawyers haven't seen this paper yet. That there is the two veto limits that we've discussed, that if the veto is in place at the start of a financial year, a caretaker budget at the same level as the previous year's budget applies, and that the petitioning and so on is the same as in the summary, so it's 15 days, 15 days, 15 days. And then if the second veto applies, in paragraph 13 on page 2 of this paper, ICANN will operate on the previous year's budget for the new fiscal year. And so that's the teeth that people were talking about. There's been lots of suggestions and discussion, but this is the only option that's kind of floated up as a way to crystallize that. And so I just honestly think that we have to get to a close on this. And so this is my best effort at that. So I'd ask, and I'm sure I've missed some points that people have raised in the emails, because as you're all aware, there's a lot of email going on. So can we have a speaking list on this one? Alan, your hand is up.
Thank you very much. Many, many moons ago, I suggested something about a line item budget, and we said we'd talk about it later in Workstream 2 or something, and I haven't thought much more about it. Today, Jonathan Zook made a comment in response to George's piece that I thought brought the, he didn't use that term, but I think brought the focus back, saying this budget veto is not necessarily a practical tool, I think is the word he expressed, but empowers the community to perhaps get better, more refined tools in Workstream 2, which might be something like a line item veto or a more targeted budget adjustment mechanism. And I think that's inspired, because we all agree there are problems with this as a real operational tool. I think we need a reference to what might come in Workstream 2 as a follow-on to it, which I think will remove a fair amount of the objection that people might have to the details we have here. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Jonathan, your hand is up.
Thanks, Jordan. I guess since I offered that, I'll clarify. I mean, I don't know whether or not a line item veto is the way to go. I think what George was suggesting, and what we do spend quite a bit of time in the document discussing, is the notion of improving the process in and having better cooperation and involvement of the community in the creation of the budget and strategic plan in the first place. And I think there's pretty much general agreement that that's, quote-unquote, operational answer to the problems that we see and to the problems that George raised in his post. But that this effort was about empowering the community and creating an environment that would be more conducive to those other reforms taking place. So that was the point I was trying to make. And I think it's smart to think of this power that way and not as something that we're going to use all the time in an operational way, but to actually create the environment in which more meaningful change to the development process can occur under Workstream 2.
Thanks, Jonathan. I put myself on the speaking list because I think the point you've just made is a good one. I think the point that George made is a good one, and I think just looking at this again, the paragraph in this version that does refer to that improvement is paragraph 04 at the bottom of page 1. And that paragraph needs to get back in a reference to saying that this is on the table for Workstream 2 to improve. That was there before. I think I've deleted it by accident, more or less. So if staff could note that as an action point to add in a reference to Workstream 2, a direct reference in paragraph 4, that would be helpful. Those two, four. Overall, the idea of going down a line item veto now is definitely not the right thing. It's something that could be discussed in the work stream too. We've had a few comments here. We've got a text in front of us. I'm suggesting adding in, again, that direct reference to WS2. Jonathan, is that a new hand up from you or an old hand?
Old, sorry.
Thanks. Matthew, your hand is up.
Yeah, it's a quick suggestion to add a reference when we discuss INI budget to the type of detail that was provided by the CWG stewardship about what they consider within the INI budget or outside. And so I would suggest that when we discuss the INI budget protection, we cross-reference to the CWG stewardship. I think it's Annex P or something like this, where there's a clear description to avoid any misunderstanding about what we mean by what is in the INI budget or not in the INI budget.
Thanks, Matthew. Let's add that as a footnote at the first reference to the INI budget in paragraph 3. So just a reference to that. I don't think we should try and define in this veto power what ICANN needs to present in terms of it, but cross-reference is helpful. I'll take Caboose, and then hopefully we can close the speaking list. Caboose, your hand is up.
I don't have a specific point, but I want to say that now we are close to wind up everything. There is, and for each of these pieces, we have added few words or few things. But I don't know whether we had the time to make a thorough review of each section to see whether there is any apparent inconsistency. Is it possible that we have that sort of review by one or two or three people to make from one section, for instance, section count and feasibility, accountability, that, so on and so forth, for each section, power for rejection of budget and so on, so from A to Z, this section, to see whether there is any inconsistency with other sections?
Yep, I think that's a task that the co-chairs, the rapporteurs, and the staff will take responsibility for in the assembly of the final document.
Okay.
So I think you can rely on any major problems being fleshed out, and if there's major problems that need discussion among the group, there will be a quick email notification of it. So thanks, Caboose. Right, okay. Thank you, everyone. I think we're nearly there with this one. And so the two changes that we've mentioned are to make sure you mention Workstream 2 in paragraph 4, to make that reference to what's in the IANA budget in paragraph 3, and I would like us to move on to the next, and also that we need to get a legal review of this paper. I'd like us to move on to the next item, which is the community model flooding rates and the community mechanism. Now, I can't remember whether there's a legal comments draft here or not, but the paper that we've got in front of you is the basic guts of it. There's been a lot of discussion on this. Some people have raised the votes that particular groups have. There's one important point that got raised a little bit obliquely on the email list, which is that do we need to provide in this section guidance around the potential participation of other ACs? And the suggestion I think Paul Schindler made on the list was that we should add back in the other potential voting participants, so GAC with 5 votes, SAC with 2 votes, ISAC with 2 votes, and to have some kind of mechanism specified by how they would signify their participation. And the obvious one there is a decision of that SO or AC with a particular period of notice, and then a particular description of how that would impact the voting thresholds or majorities required for the exercise of any of the community powers. And Matthew's confirming that there are no big issues that have come back from the legal review on this. So I guess I would like to take a speaking list on this. The last point is on quorums and vote counting. There does need to be a little bit more work done on that, I think. And Bernie's done some work on it from the staff side. I'm hoping that Alan can join him in reviewing and proposing some language here for our last call to have a look at. But speaking with, please, on this, Alan, you're first.
Thank you. The discussion we had in public, followed by a private one I had with Lyman, implied that he thought that a number of people within the SAC would have significant problems if they were listed in the bylaws as being allowed to exercise the powers, even if they chose not to in the immediate future. But I see Julie is on the call, so maybe she should speak on behalf of the SAC itself without using. But Lyman seemed to be very definite about that. Thank you.
I've heard the same feedback from them, Alan. So let's see what Julie says. Thanks, Alan. Caboose, your hand is up.
Yes, I sent recently an email with respect to exclusion of all these three ACs, and I mentioned that if you exclude them to this power, and in future, 2 years, 3 years, they decide to exercise the power, what they have to do, because it is not in the bylaw, then they have to modify the bylaw, make a lot of things. I was suggesting that you put the rights in the bylaw, but they don't exercise that. Exercise of the right is upon their decision. And I don't know why totally you eliminate these three ACs, not putting them. And suppose that they need to do something. There are many things, change of the bylaw or any other things that may affect their rights, and they have to comment and they have to participate. Then it would be difficult if something it is not foreseen. At the beginning, we were talking, their right will be there in the bylaw, but the exercising the right is different. Two has decided not to exercise, the other is still discussing whether or not exercise the right. But I see here you have totally, definitively eliminated these three AC. Is that the reason for that? I am not very comfortable.
That's the issue I was just trying to raise, Caboose. Where the current draft sits, I think, is just reflecting the people who've indicated a likelihood of participation, or at least not indicated a non-likelihood of participation. And the suggestion that I just reflected in my comments from the list was that we should list all of them on the same basis as was in our first report. But other people are saying a different thing there. If we do list them all, we just have to have a small process about how people opt into starting to exercise their votes or not. Robin, your hand is up.
Hi, this is Robin. Yes, I just wanted to continue to raise an objection to the voting waves as they're currently listed. I think that the way what we're doing doesn't really take into account the different roles that the stakeholder groups and ACs actually have. So I think we should not have these weighted votes. Five each, as we've got here. I think that there's an awful lot of participation rights that need to be clarified. There's a lot of double dipping that can happen. There's a lot of members in at large that are also members of the GNSO, and we haven't really delved into how to handle that. We haven't talked about what the different roles are supposed to be and how they're evolving to have a new say over a jurisdiction, if you will, over issues that they hadn't before. Is that what we're really intending here? I don't think it is. I don't think my members want to see the GNSO devalued to this extent. And so I think that there'll be a good bit of concern within the GNSO of this particular issue, this voting weights issue, if we continue to go on with insisting that it be five per SO and AC. So I think rather than having a sort of a crisis on this, that we put this in work stream two and we really take the time to have meaningful discussion and to look at what some of the different roles are of the different ACs and the different SOs and the extent to which we can prevent against overrepresentation or double dipping. And I just think there's a lot of details that need to be worked through, and the way we've got it now is too premature, and I fear that it devalues the GNSO important role too much, and we'll get a bit of pushback from the GNSO as a result. Thank you.
Thanks, Robin. Ed Morris, your hand is up.
Yeah, thanks, Jordan. I obviously echo what Robin says. And folks, if you go with this in the final proposal, I can only speak for myself, but from what I'm hearing from my members in the NCSG, we will oppose the transition. We've got to find a solution here. I don't want to deal with that today. The meeting's too packed. What I want to deal with is the document itself, specifically the description of ALEC, which states, was structurally designed to represent Internet users within ICON. As I've shown on the list, I've gone to the bylaws. That's not true. This is probably not the place to debate this. What I'd suggest is we just remove the description. If not, I have an alternate proposal, which is online, but why don't we just remove the description and just go in the Outlier Advisory Committee, period. And that way we get around the issue for now.
Thanks, Ed, for that suggestion. That seems simple and easily implemented. I'll carry on with the speaking list. Julie.
Thanks very much, Jordan. I guess that what I would like to say is that the SAC would appreciate whatever is proposed to be left as open as possible to enable ESSAC participation should it choose to go or make that decision to participate. I honestly can't say at this stage whether ESSAC will choose to come into the community mechanism or not, because there really are a great diversity of very strongly held views within ESSAC on this. So my request is if this can be left as open as possible with, I think, Kavusa's suggestion that the rights be in the bylaws for all SOACs to join, then that would, if you like, allow ESSAC to make that decision further downstream. On the issue of voting weights, I guess the point I'd like to make is that ESSAC has never made any public comment on its view with regard to proposed voting weights, should it choose to participate. It has remained silent. I think others have assumed that because it remained silent, it was comfortable with two votes. I don't think that logical conclusion should necessarily be drawn. The ESSAC remained silent on the proposed number of votes in the first draft because it was objecting to that whole proposed membership model as it was then, which of course is now no longer on the table. So I would also support leaving the voting weights discussion until Workstream 2. Thank you very much for allowing me to express a view here.
Thanks, Julie. I just want to make one point, which is that we do have to have a voting weight allocation in the Workstream 1 proposal because the mechanism has to be workable. So we've got to say something about it. There's nothing to say that we can't clearly assess it or work it through in more depth in Workstream 2. But we'll have to say something in this report.
If I could make a comment then with regard to that, I guess there are many within ESSAC who would be concerned if the issue of security and stability were deemed, and if ESSAC were to participate, if that were deemed to be less influential than other influences in the community.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to move on with the speaking list, if I may. Greg, your hand is up.
Thank you. Greg Shatton, for the record, member of the GNSO. So, yeah, of course, the GNSO is super awesome. But I think that I do not have a problem, and to the best of my knowledge, constituency that I'm a member of does not have a problem with these voting weights, as long as we have the fractional voting concept, which allows a vote, even if it's a fractional vote, to be cast by our constituency, and so that we're part of the process. I think one could make arguments for and against the importance of each constituency in some ways, and I think that's not going to do us any good whatsoever to do so. So I think we should stick with what we've got here, and I think it seems like the vast majority has been supportive of that. With regard to the characterization of the ALAC, I would say that if we're not going to characterize the ALAC, we might as well not characterize the SOs either. We don't need to be explanatory here too much. We need to be just minimalistic, so we could just say, the community mechanism gives the bulk of influence on an equal basis between the three SOs and the at-large advisory committee, period. And then, especially based on what Julie just said, if a new SO or another AC, which would include RSAC and SAC, gains voting rights, they would have an equal number of votes. And end of story. We can always go back and change this later, but we have to put a ship in the water, and this seems to be the ship that has the most support. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. The next speaker is Kavus.
Yes, Jordan, believe me, I am totally disturbed. I don't understand why in a society a group of society or a stage or a category of society will not be given to select whether or not they write at any moment on any issue. If, for instance, let us say any of these three, they do not participate, and later on the other four, they modify element of the bylaw which directly affect them, what these three they do? At that time, they say that now we want to vote because element of the bylaw relating to our vote has been modified and we want to react. At that time, you have to go to the change of the bylaw. It is not easy. Why not from the very beginning, as the lawyer mentioned, you provide the right to vote for them. If they don't exercise, that is their choice. Still, I am not happy. This is major element and major departure, and we are going to depriving a group of the community in the ICANN because of their momentarily decision. Perhaps some of them, they do not consider the consequence of that. The consequence is that after 3 years, they may change their mind, they want to join the group, or there might be other changing the part of the bylaw that directly influence them, and they don't have any possibility or any mechanism to react, and that is not good. I don't think that that is correct. If you don't have time to discuss that, mention that, this right will be given. How to exercise that will be later, but it is not good to limit it these four, even if some of them has not yet definitively say they don't participate. So we need to maintain and go back to the previous arrangement and not accept that. Thank you.
Thanks, Caboose. I've already suggested a number of times that we need to amend this paper in order to do what you've said, so I agree with you personally. I've got Matthew and Thomas on the speaking list. Matthew, yours is the floor.
Yeah, thank you, Jordan. Matthew is speaking. So first of all, I agree that this cannot be workstream 2. It is clear that a system that we would set that would not actually clarify how the influence is spread across this community mechanism would not be satisfactory in terms of the NTIA, in terms of, for instance, checking against capture. Number two, I think I would support Kavi's suggestion that we need to mention exactly how open we are to the GAC and SSAC and RSAC in the future, or actually in a very close future if need be, and how this process would take place. On the other hand, we need to test our system with at least the organizations that so far have confirmed they want to participate in the mechanism, so that we test our voting system against the minimum level of votes that we might have. And finally, I'm a big supporter of the one SORAC five votes system because it's simple, it's easy to understand, and it's not open to consideration of, and I quote, respective values of organizations within the ICANN system, which I think is something that we will never be able to sort out in anywhere in the future. So I think we have a system that's been actually put up for as reference model and got quite a bit of traction. And if there was a need to change it, that would certainly require a number of arguments that would have to be related to the NTIA criteria or some stress test or something, and not on perception of value of respective organizations within the ICANN system, which I think will never get consensus. Thank you.
Thanks, Matthew. Thomas.
Thanks very much, Jordan. Let me just respond to a few points that have been made in this discussion. First of all, if people take issue with how the groups are introduced, let's drop all the explanations. It's just an explanation that we can do without. What matters is the substance that we're conveying. And when it comes to substance, voting weights are a must-have. We must not leave any ambiguity as to who holds what number of votes and how these can be exercised by whom. That is a must. Then, with respect to the number of votes, the number of 5 votes has been mentioned since we met in Frankfurt a couple of months back. It has been included in our first public comment report, and it has received a lot of traction, not only inside our group, but also there was no substantial opposition from the commenters. And I think we need to understand that the exercise that we are conducting now is refining what we presented to the community in the first public comment and honor the wishes of the community. So I am strongly in favor of keeping it to 5 votes, because that is what the community has already been acquainted with. And just for those that consider objecting to this notion, I think we're now in a phase where it is critical for everyone to compromise in order to provide for consensus that is broadly supported. And bear in mind that we are going to have reviews. So should we see at some future point in time that the mechanism with the number of votes and the weighting does not work, then this can be adjusted. But for the time being, I urge everyone that we stick to the number of 5 votes. And speaking about who holds what powers in the community mechanism, as you will remember, the co-chairs have reported about the meetings that we had with ESSEC and ARSEC in Buenos Aires. And what we are seeing in this updated report, on the draft second report, is our way of honoring the wishes, not to say instructions, that we got there. And that was that ESSEC and ARSEC both would like to stay away from voting for the time being. The system should be open should at any point in time in the future they wish to reconsider. They want to be invited to the table in order to contribute to the discussion, but at the moment, it's, and I'm paraphrasing here, they see they have a certain remit. They are contributing their expertise within their remit. They want to be advisory. They don't want to vote. And I think that this is something that we should take as the basis of our next report. Julia, I very much appreciate you updating our group on the discussion that has taken place. But as we said, the system is not going to be finite or carved in concrete forever. And this it does not go for ESSEC and ARSEC or perhaps the GAC only, but for every group. We have been tasked to keep the system sufficiently open for new groups to enter the ecosystem and also to allow for change. And I hope that everybody finds sufficient comfort in that perspective and that we can get closure on this topic and agree on the consensus. Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. Caboose, I see your hand up for a third time.
Yes.
Do you have something to add?
Yeah, the analysis of Thomas is good, but let me be straightforward. I believe that there are motion in the group to not mention GAC in order to justify to NTIA, look, GAC government has no possibility to participate at any decision-making. So be quiet and don't worry. We have done what you have got. This is incorrect, and I try to expand this opposition to other things. We are not going to satisfy NTIA. We have to provide possibility in future for GAC to participate in the vote if he so wishes. We should not look at excluding totally GAC just to satisfy NTIA. It's not correct, and there are people working on that area, pushing from left, right, upside down and dines out up and so on and so forth to minimize and minimize and minimize in order to show to the NTIA, Mr. Senator, no GAC and no government is not correct. I oppose to that. Whether I have the right to oppose or not, I oppose to that. We should leave this open for the GAC to decide in future to vote. If any part of the bylaw relates to the GAC and has influence on the activities, policy making of the GAC and public policy issues and the very right of the GAC and advice, that would have no possibility to take at that time. We must foresee the voting for the GAC at the very beginning. Whether they exercise that right or not, that is another issue. This is quite necessary and fundamental. I do not agree in any other things. Thank you.
Thanks, Caruso. I think your position is clear. Look, folks, I'd like to try and do a bit of a sum up here on what I've taken from this call. And after I've done that, Alan, I'll take your hand if it still needs to be had. What I've taken from this, first of all, is that we should list all of the SOs and ACs, that we should list all the SOs and ACs with 5 votes each, that we should specify a way that they, the ones who are not going to participate at the start of this model, in terms of voting, GAC, unknown, SAC, and RSAC not, have a nice, simple, but clearly defined mechanism by which they can opt into the method, and that the thresholds and quorum rules that need to be worked on will deal with that in the simplest possible way. And that we will remove the scriptors of the ALAC and the SOs in the second paragraph there. So, and let's remember that we are not finalizing the proposal. We're finalizing our second public comment report. So we can identify those as changes and have public comments on it, and that will then generate some public comments. So we'll get some input on the question before we finalize the proposal in September and October. Alan, your hand is up.
Yeah, you've pretty well captured what I was going to say. The only other thing I would add is make it clear to the ACs and to the other ACs, doesn't have to be in the report, that should they choose to actually want to be excluded altogether and you require a bylaw change, should they ever choose to participate, you know, we can honor that in the final report. But everything else you've said, I think I support. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think people hear that and can make a definitive statement along those lines. So my proposal then is that I track those changes to this report sometime, God, I don't know, in the next 6 hours or so, and that we put that out for a discussion, if we can, at the CCWG call, whenever that is, and then for a final discussion at our WP1 call in about 22 hours. So thank you for that discussion, everyone. We'll move on to the next agenda item. These items 8 through 12, we said we would look at the comment bubbles that the lawyers had produced, to just see if there was any feedback from them that we needed to deal with. And so I hope, staff, that you've got PDFs of those available, and I did recirculate them maybe half an hour before the call. This is the community mechanism as a sole member paper. So if we just wander our way through this first, I know that, Matthew, you have reviewed these, and so I'm going to turn to you without warning you and say, were there any particular comments in this re-editing that you think that we should focus any attention on, or are they all relatively straightforward drafting changes?
Thanks, Jordan. This is Matthew speaking, and I'm trying to correct my notes, but I think on 5A, it was mostly clarifications and a comment that something was not consistent with the visual summary provided by Explain, but that's something that it's the visual summary that needs to be adjusted. So I think that's, as we've discussed this one already, and that's good.
Okay, thanks, Thomas. Sorry, I was on mute. The only other thing, I think, so fixing that visual summary is fine. The other thing that we need to add somewhere in this part of the report is just that general dealing with statutory powers that aren't otherwise mentioned. So that does need to be dealt with. Um, So this is the right place to do it. So that, in fact, is a drafting note in yellow just above the 5A2 heading that the lawyers have deleted. So that's, I think, an action. In fact, Leon, if you're still on the call, is that something that it would be worth you raising with the lawyers, that we just need to have a statement, a paragraph that deals with all of the other statutory powers? Is that something that you could do? Leon's going to respond to my question in the chat. So if there are no other comments from people here on this question, I think we'll move on to the next paper, which is the removal of individual ICANN directors paper that the lawyers have done some comments on. So staff, if you could put that one up. And Matthew, just to warn you, I'm going to make the same request of you here to draw our attention to any of these edits that are particular to us dealing with. Are there any that you want us to focus on?
There were three I found substantial comments. One is the lawyers were questioning whether petition was actually required or any voting of the community mechanism, whether director being removed is being removed at the decision of an ASO or AC, which is appointing the director. So that's something that is might need to be clarified on paragraph 6 when we describe the common elements that apply to all items. I think that's just a clarification that the recollection of the core is correct.
Okay. Can I just hold you there, Matthew, for a minute?
Sure.
At our last WP1 call, we agreed that this paragraph 6 would actually become two versions of this paragraph because Greg, among others, identified some unclarity in the way that it was presented. So the drafting, that redrafting hasn't been done. It couldn't be done in time for the section going off for lawyer review. So what we'll need to do, I think, is to do that quite quickly. I'm just making a note. If there could be an action point there. So we need to pick up that suggestion from the last call, which is that we'd have one set of elements that apply for a director being removed by an SO and AC, and another for ones that were being removed from the NOMCOM. And in terms of the petitioning point is only important because it triggers the discussion phase of the exercise of the community power. So if we don't have a petition, we need some other way to signal to the community that there's going to be a discussion about the future of an SOAC director. The petition is a nice consistent way of doing that across the system. So it seems to me that we should keep it, notwithstanding the lawyer's feedback. Back to you, Matthew.
Yeah, I think the question was not whether there should be a petition, but there seemed to be understanding that the petition was to trigger a vote by the community mechanisms, so all ASO and ACs. So I think that was just a confusion, and there's no question that a petition is needed within the ASO or AC. So that's really another argument to separate between ASO or AC removal and NOMCOM removal.
Yeah, thanks. How about any other points there, Matthew?
There's a second point, which is on paragraph, I think, is 6D, the thresholds. And the lawyers are questioning whether we have tested the thresholds with the number of votes that we are anticipating to have, and that's the action item that Bernie and Alan are supposed to be working on. So I think that's taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And a third comment on item number 8, where they note that the bylaws already provide for filling vacancies in seats appointed by ASOR and ACs. And they are almost suggesting that we rely on this existing mechanism to develop the expected processes in the case of a removal. I think that's a useful suggestion.
Okay, so Matthew, the implication of that would be that that second sentence in paragraph 8 would just be deleted, because the first sentence already says the SOAC is responsible for filling the vacancy through the usual process.
We should probably also mention that such a process already exists, and mention the number of the articles of the existing bylaws on this.
Okay. Thank you. So aside from splitting the procedures for SOAC appointed directors and for NOMCOM appointed directors, and the other comments from the lawyers here, are there any other comments on this paper? My intention is to get a redraft of it out, and that we would then discuss that redraft at the WP1 call tomorrow, or if we need to, at the CCWG call tonight. Okay, if there are no other comments on this one, let's move to the lawyer's comments on the next one, which is the recall of the entire ICANN board. And in this paper, if memory serves me right, what the lawyers have done, if they accepted all of the track changes they made to the previous version, and then have added some further track changes and some comments. So once again, I'm going to turn to our helpful co-chair, Matthew, to just run us through the comments here.
Thank you, Jordan. Comment number one is on paragraph 241. It's about the petitioning, and they're suggesting to consider how a recall would work if the petition is climbed to a scheduled election, given that one third of the board is elected each year, and so on and so forth. I don't know what to make of this. I think that's for the community to consider anyway.
I don't know that we should mention or consider that question myself. Is that the only one that we need to think about? Bizbachi, I'll ask you to just quickly run through them all, and then we can have a discussion about any of them.
Okay. Sure. So comment number two is on paragraph, it's on page one as well, down on the bottom side of the page. It's about requirements to select one or more directors. Oh, it's a bit complex. That's one of the lawyerish thing where I'm totally lost. And they are asking whether we should consider to require the selection of persons to serve on the interim board as a condition of voting on the recall, which we'll probably need to discuss. Another comment on page two is a comment that, according to the lawyers, given the short duration of the interim board, we should consider whether the interim board could be excused from complying with any of the current requirements in the bylaws in relation to diversity. That's a topic we've discussed already in the group. There were some differing views on this. And finally, a comment So I'm reading the comment, but I'm not so sure where it was related to. on the need to establish who certifies or oversees the votes?
We do need to do that, but there's no point in discussing it now. That's an implementation detail that we will get right. Yeah. They've done very detailed on this paper.
So that's it.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Matthew. Can I just make a point as well? There was an unfortunate interaction between the time of our last call, the ability of me and others to do some redrafting, and what went to the lawyers. So some of these questions have already been dealt with in an updated draft that we did that the lawyers didn't review. For example, the diversity requirements. For example, the requirement for people to nominate a proposed replacement when they were moving towards the vote on whether or not to remove. So unfortunately, we have an example of being the version being out of sync. That means that some of these lawyers' questions have already been answered. So once again, with this paper, the job there is to bring those two into a coherent, integrated piece, and to have a review of them on the CCWG call or on the next WP1 call. But are there any other major issues? Are there any remaining major issues with this? I feel like it's just about there. The other thing that we discussed in the last call was the NOMCOM appointees to the interim board. And I think that where we'd got to there was that we would say if they had available, they could appoint two or more members to the interim board. So if there are no other major items on this one, we'll move on to just looking at the lawyer's comments on the next one, which is on the fundamental bylaws paper. And we'd already discussed, we'd had a look at that one sort of obliquely earlier on in the agenda, but if the staff can load the lawyer's one there, if you look at the comments that the lawyers made in the comments bubbles here, we've already discussed the issue in comment bubble number two about the sole member having the statutory authority to make bylaws changes. There's a mention in comment three about the threshold issue that we need Alan and Bernie to do that bit of work on. We've talked already about the IRP rules being fundamental. I've already mentioned that we need to add in the community mechanism of sole member part as a part of the fundamental bylaws. And the last, the lawyers have a different interpretation of the requirement here for consensus and change in comment bubble five. It's just they've taken account of that in the red line that they suggest. And the threshold matter in comment six again. So are there any other issues with this one that people would like to raise? None of those stood out to me as being particularly massive or significant. If we could flick on to the standard bylaws paper then. I realize that we're going through these quite quickly, everyone, but we've seen most of this text before, so I hope that that's okay. The lawyers have also commented and done a bit more red ink on the standard bylaws question and the comments there. It's just a drafting thing that corrects the wrong example that was used here, which was something that was on the list to do. And there's a second comment on page two, which is the same comment about the power to amend bylaws for the member, which we said we're going to address elsewhere. So are there any comments to raise about this text? Again, it seems to me the redlining is simply some improvements. Silence on that one. Okay. So that ends the content that we needed to discuss on this call. the next thing that we need to do is just agreeing the agenda for our next call. And what we had on the agenda for that, the draft, was to deal with any outstanding items that come up in the CCWG call on the 28th of July. So that call is in between now and our next WP1 meeting. We had to deal with any other outstanding items from our earlier meetings. And I think it's clear there are some changes that we need to make in terms of the budget power, some explanatory improvements, the voting paper, the removal of individual directors. There are some tweaks to the all-board recall paper. And I think those four papers need to just go on the agenda for the next WP1 call. So I hope that I don't know if the staff are actually taking notes in this call, but they're not coming up in the discussion notes part. If you are, I hope that you are taking those. So I'd like to call for suggestions of any other items that we need to deal with on our next call, which starts in about 22 hours. So I'll take the list as it appears in that order. Caboose, your hand is up.
Yes, Jordan. My comment goes to Thomas Rickert, to Leon Chances, and to Matthew Whaley. We will hold them totally responsible to ignoring the very right of part of the community if they have not yet decided to take either way. And we prejudge their decision and we exclude them. Second, I, as a participant of the society, I receive all the ballots in every voting in my country. Whether I vote or I don't vote, that is another issue. But never the balloting arrangement exclude me and do not give me any ballot. This is a wrong and a mistake and satisfying one particular group which has been pushing for that. Please seriously reconsider. Please consider putting the right of these three AC in the bylaw to vote. They may not vote at all. That is their choice. But if one day they need to vote, they do not need to modify the bylaw, which now has very, very critical criteria to change. This is the last thing I told, and I would like to be fully reflected in the minute, in the chat, in the thing that we are making a mistake. We putting something, a prejudging a decision. GAC never decided that would not attend. The GAC discussed the issue when we had three other models, designator, membership, and that damn incorporated association. The new model GAC did not have the chance. They established two working groups, and they have not come up with any decision. You need not to exclude them to participate in the vote. You should bring them back. Matthew? Others, Leon. Please be careful. Thank you.
Caboose, I think I've got good news for you. I think that my summary of what we were going to do with the voting weights was that we were going to include all of the other SOSACs, including GAC, and include a simple process by which they would communicate if they were going to be participating or not. So I think that your concern has been heard. And I think that you'll see in the revised draft of that voting paper that we'll discuss at our next meeting that your concerns are fully dealt with.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It's a very pity that 4 o'clock in the morning in South Korea I'm waking up to discuss that, but no one from the GAC member 5, GAC for normal participants, they never attend this meeting and they are sleeping or they are dining or they are doing something else. It is a pity, really, that they do not show up and they do not react to anything at all. Pity.
Okay, well, that's a discussion for you and colleagues in the GAC to have about their participation otherwise. But I think your concern in a substantive sense is being dealt with. Thank you, Caboose. Matthew, your hand is up.
Thank you, Jordan. I think you've responded to Caboose perfectly, so I will not elaborate on this, other than saying that I fully agree. The point I wanted to make was about the call that we're having tomorrow, the CCWG call. During this call, you may have seen in the agenda, we will go go through every section of the report, this attempt to. And the first sections of the report are Work Party 2, but I hope we can reach the Work Party 1 items, where we will try and close as many items as possible and ensure we have agreement, or assess whether we don't in some cases. So I will encourage you, Jordan, to maybe just flag the key items during this call, if there are any key items for discussion, so that we can introduce the conversation quickly and proceed to assess whether we have agreement or not based on the work, on the prep work that's been done by Work Party 1. And my final point is regarding the lawyers. Some of the documents of Work Party 1 remain to be reviewed by the lawyers, and I'd like to know when exactly you think you will be in a position to provide a version of this document that we could send to them, considering that currently we have announced them that we would send them the remaining parts of the document tomorrow. And that's it. Thank you.
Thanks, Matthew. So that relates to the work methods to apply now. So just before finishing the speaking list, I just wanted to respond. I think it makes most sense for me to just do a document, a one- or two-page document, that for each of the papers tries to set out the key decisions, either that we've just made or consensus or otherwise, and to just circulate that first on the WP1 list, hopefully within an hour, just so people have time to review that and make sure that it's a fair reflection, and then to go into the redrafting process afterwards. The problem is a matter of time. I've got day job commitments that I can't avoid later today, and I don't think it's fair to ask anyone else to try and do some of the redrafting that's done in my head. So by the end of the 28th, if that's what you mean in terms of getting new documents to the lawyers, that's fine. I'll have redone any redlining that I was planning to do within 12 hours of now. So if that time works, that time works. But I hope people are okay with just getting that summary out so we can all look at it, make sure that it's a reasonable reflection to help guide the CCWG's discussion at its meeting in whenever that is. It's in about 15 hours, I think. Alan, your hand is up.
Thank you very much. As I noted in the email, I'm chairing an ALAC meeting exactly parallel with the WP1 meeting. If, when you send out the documents to be reviewed, if you could make it as clear as possible that which are the correct documents, so I can try to do a quick review and put any comments into them before the meeting, I would appreciate that.
Yep.
Thank you.
I'll make sure that I'll undertake for everyone to make sure that I send the addenda around for WP1 no later than what would it be? 0900 on the 28th. So 12 hours from now, and that document will include all of the markups for discussion on that next call. So they'll be out before the CCWG call, and that will give you, they'll be clean except for any highlighted bits or any comment bubbles, so that should be easy to deal with.
Then you will have my blessing, thank you.
I'll just try not to go crazy while delivering that. Tavus, your hand is up.
Just a small question. The next call of CCWG would be at what time on 29th of August, of July? Is that 29th of July? I lost the timing, yeah. CCWG.
It's CCWG? I don't know. Can someone tell us when the next CCWG meeting is? Is it at 12 hours UTC? Matthew, do you know? Can
yes.
Have confirmed it. It's 12 hours UTC.
That's correct. On 28th of July, 12 hours UTC. And we are seriously contemplating an additional one on Thursday in case we don't manage to be as efficient as this meeting and conclude all items tomorrow. And I think for Thursday, the timing has not been set so far, if I'm not mistaken.
So in case it helps you in Korea, Kabus, that means the call will be starting in 15 hours and 9 minutes. 15 hours and 8 minutes.
Okay, thank you. Thanks.
Great. Okay, gosh, what a lot of work we've done today. Are there any other business items to raise, or can we draw this one to a close and look forward to speaking with each other again in 15 hours and then in 22 hours. Any other items? Kabus, your hand is up.
No, I don't have any. Sorry.
Okay. Right. All right. No one else's hand is up. While the going is good, we'll finish this one early. Who would have thought? Thank you, everyone, and we'll talk soon. Have a good morning, afternoon, evening, whatever.
All right. Thank you.
Well done, Jordan. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye, everyone. Bye-bye.